Preston.
Jobsinkent.com.
Rift Accounting. The accountants of tomorrow, today. Riftaccounting.com.
Wave after wave of good music. This is Channel Radio.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, July the 28th. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Sirkin.
You know who's listening?
Who's listening?
Miriam McGurk is listening whilst having luncheon. And also the Fat Carrot 11 is listening because she's not in the kitchen, she's in the office.
Will that be the lovely Jane?
Yeah, she's sorting catering estimates instead. So right. She's listening.
Cool. I've got an email here that I want to read to you. It says, good afternoon. If Business Bunker listeners are looking for a place to hold a meeting in Canterbury during the month of August, we've got a great August special offer. 30% off of our standard meeting room rates. Refreshments and caterings are also available on request. Please call today to book a meeting room and get your 30% discount. And that's sent from the lovely Tracy Blasey, who is the Assistant Centre Manager at the Canterbury Innovation Centre. And you can find out about the Canterbury Innovation Centre by going to their website, which is www.basepoint.co.uk, basepoint.co.uk. So 30% discount if you want to book a meeting room in Canterbury during August. So do participate in that if that's what you need.
We've had a tweet from the Whitstable Stove Shop, the lovely Mark Smith.
Hello, Mark.
When you buy locally produced charcoal, he says, from his shop, which is in Saddleton Road in Whitstable, you're supporting another Kent business as well as mine. Shop local, made in Kent.
Cool. What we've got now is the next in our series of the 10 BIG traits that we've been discussing so far. And so far we've looked at enthusiast, transformer, and one other. And I can't remember what it was.
Oh, well, I was probably in Manhattan.
No, you weren't. Anyway, this week we're going to be talking with Dr. Simon Raby of the University of Kent and Professor Mark Gilman of the Birmingham University about Delegator.
The Business Bunker Show, Dr. Simon Raby of the University of Kent Business School, BIG Development Programme. Simon, welcome back onto the show. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Hi, Paul. Really good to see you too.
Cool. Today we're going to be discussing in our series of business and improvement growth traits that Simon and his team have been looking at over a period of time, trying to understand and find out what helps businesses to become successful and to maintain that success and to grow their businesses in whatever way growth means to you or to them. Simon, why don't you give us a bit more background to the programme and what you're doing and what we're going to be discussing today.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Paul, and thanks for the nice introduction. I mean, obviously, we were sitting some time ago back in Canterbury Innovation Centre thinking this would be a great thing to do. I mean, we've done a lot of research at the business school at the University of Kent on what drives business growth.
Right.
And the more and more research we've done, the more and more we've thought, but actually, it's not about just growth. It's not about just getting bigger, which typically people associate with growth. Mm. It's actually about thinking about success and what success means in its widest sense, both at an individual level, us as individual business owners, but also at an organisational level. Right. And therefore, those questions have driven our research and continue to drive our research, and that research gets translated into a range of different outputs. So we've, as you said, we've got some publications, we've got some data we can share with people, we also run a range of different programs to help business owners develop themselves. And one of the key things we have is something called the Big Ten, and it's effectively a diagnostic. It's not the 10 steps to success. It's not the you do these things, you're going to be infinitely successful. Because that just doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
There is no crystal ball. But what it does do is it challenges us at an individual level and an organisational level to think about how are we doing what we're doing, why are we doing what we're doing, and what could we be doing differently.
Mm.
So there are 10 aspects, characteristics, traits, whatever you might want to label them. And through each one of these shows, we're obviously exploring one particular characteristic. And today, which is really exciting, we're exploring the delegator.
Absolutely.
And we're exploring that with Professor Mark Gilman, who's currently a professor in SME development and growth from Birmingham City University. So welcome, Mark, to the show.
Hello, Mark. Welcome to the Business Bunker, Mark. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show with us today. And I'm just fascinated by this, that you're a professor of SME.
That's right,
growth and development.
Growth and development. What a fabulous job. Yeah, what a fabulous
job. Dream job. It was my dream job written on the key size of paper when I saw it advertised.
Really?
I didn't go for it.
I don't blame you at all. What a lovely job.
What in particular, Mark, stood out for you when you applied for the job, when you read the movie advert?
Well, I mean, it's been a long, long time now. At the time they were called on Paul, I've been working in industry and in academia, and my key interest is in people and performance within organisations and why do people do what they do.
Yeah.
So, along the way, as I've gained different experiences, etc., then I've come to be looking at, how to help owner managers, particularly SME companies, to actually deal with people and performance within their organisation. So how do we get these owner managers really understanding what they need to do to make their companies grow? And it's all about people.
Absolutely.
About people within our organisation. So how do we best use each other to get our companies on that growth?
It's interesting that you say that, Mark. Yeah, this is the fifth, I think, in the series of traits that we've discussed so far, Simon. And I think in every single one, every single guest has said exactly the same thing. Business is about people. And you are absolutely spot on. It's about how we manage and organise and deploy and motivate and deal with people.
Yeah. How do we get away from this us and them syndrome?
Yeah.
To get working together as employers and employees.
Absolutely.
And today's particular characteristic, which we're exploring, which is at the heart of people, because it's about the interactions, the interpersonal relationships between individuals, and one of these key characteristics is the delegator. Mm. And just to give you a very quick definition of what we mean by the delegator role, it relates to the ability to empower us to deliver things that you otherwise would carry out yourself. So it's about allowing others to take some responsibility for tasks. So tasks, therefore, what tasks? Yeah. That's a big question. What is it that we're giving away and letting go of? Mm. And how is it that we empower people? There's a lot of talk about this word empowerment.
Yeah.
It's a process. So what is that process? And through this sort of conversation today, I hope that we'll explore a little bit more about the what tasks and the how process. And what I thought I'd do quickly, just before we sort of move on, is a bit about what the research says.
Yeah, sure.
A bit about, what is it that business owners are actually telling us out there in terms of why delegation is something that's central to the success of their organisations. And one of the big areas that comes through is this dependency relationship.
Mm.
So we have numerous business owners who say, my shadow hangs over this organisation. I find it hard to step away. When I do, it all comes crashing down around my ears.
Mm-hmm.
So things go wrong. But how do you therefore protect against that? And that really hinges on how you're letting go and the process for that. There's also a recognition by a lot of the business owners that we work with of needing to work more on the business rather than just in it. So stepping into that more strategic space, there's an academic called Churchill who published some stuff years ago that basically talked about moving from a doer, being the doer, to being more of a manager.
Yeah.
So how do you make those leadership transitions? How does delegation play a role? And ultimately, delegation helps unlock that. And one of the business owners that we do work with, he speaks about the helicopter approach. And he says, every now and then, I mentally get into my helicopter, I rise above the organisation, and I look at everything in its whole systemic sense. So what is happening across the organisation? So I'm getting out of it and I'm looking at everything and displaying everything. So ultimately, delegation is a really effective practice in leadership management. It helps ultimately allow us to manage things more strategically. And we know through our analysis that it's something that really links with long-term survival and growth, ultimately, of your businesses. So that's why we think it's a really important characteristic and aspect of the Big Ten. Mark, I know you've obviously got particular interest in delegation as well and the importance of it. So I just wonder whether you might want to share something.
Well, no, that's right. I mean, delegation is key, as you said, to effective leadership and management. I mean, for most owner managers in particular, but all managers really need it. You can't do everything yourself. If you try and do everything yourself, that's where you get to the situation where you start to get stressed out, you start to get frustrated, you can't deal with the day-to-day things. So, you've got to ask those fundamental questions. What do I need to be doing as a leader in the organisation? And what obstacles do I need order to be able to delegate all the people in the company. And as we said earlier, you know, the sum of the company is the human resources within that organisation. So you need to use those human resources, you need to delegate them so that you're getting the best of their abilities to the fore.
A couple of words that I know that when we were talking about the show beforehand that came up was responsibility and accountability. And they're two words that are often bandied around in lots of organisations about you know, when I'm given accountability to this or someone needs to take responsibility for that. I don't know whether you had a particular view on what we really mean by those words and some of the pitfalls and challenges that can happen if we don't really deliver or follow through on what it is that we're actually meaning with those.
Yeah, I mean, they are awesome and they are very subjective words at the end of the day, but they are very important words that people should understand when they're using them. Yes, often staff want to be given more responsibility, but often they don't like the accountability.
Absolutely.
They're responsible for those things that they're given the responsibility for. Often the employer wants to make their employees accountable for what they want to do, but they don't want to give them the responsibility. So responsibility and accountability are words that have, you know, the potential to conflict if you don't understand it properly and explain it properly to those that you're delegating.
Absolutely. It's a funny thing, for all it's worth, I've always considered myself a delegator, and I even when I worked in big corporations, I was well known for passing the buck, for delegating. But with small businesses especially, one of the big failings that I see of owner managers is they get to the point where they think, you know, I need to delegate some responsibility here, but they can't let go. So they delegate it to someone and then keep telling them how to do it. And of course, that's disastrous because we all do things in our own way, and people will fail if they think they've got to perform in somebody else's methodology, if you see what I mean. To me, that is one of the biggest failings when people fail to delegate correctly.
Often people refer it to being a prisoner in your own organisation. So if you can't delegate effectively, you know, you're making yourself a prisoner. You're working in the organisation all the time instead of on the organisation.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things that that starts to link to me is about words such as influence and competence. So there's a particular tool out there. I mean, it's called a humanistic approach, but there's a tool out there which you can use by a guy called Will Schutz, which is actually looking at how is it that people behave in their organisations and individually. And there's a particular aspect. So people need particular things in their life, and one particular aspect is the need for control or the need for influence.
Yeah.
And people have different elements of that. Some people like lots of influence and want to have lots of influence and want to and display that. Other people don't.
Yeah.
And so that's really important to understand. And one thing that flows through that is competence.
Yeah.
Is some people love to demonstrate their competence and like others to see competence. Other people don't.
Yeah.
And so if you have a business owner, as an example, who has a high need for influencing and a high need for demonstrating competence, you're coming against the kind of things, Paul, that you're talking about, where ultimately that shadow will hang over the organisation, because the employee would be in that kind of environment thinking, well, I can't really use my initiative, because if I did use my initiative, it'd probably get crushed at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
However, other bosses who are the other extreme, who don't like to influence and don't like to show their competence, sometimes can be too hands-off.
Yeah.
And then employees who actually quite like some structure around the way that they work find that they're in a bit of at sea.
Yeah, they're drowning.
They're thinking, well, what is it that I do here? How is it that I go about actually working in the organisation? So for us around that, there's some really important questions, I think, around asking yourself as a business owner, as an executive, as a senior leader within organisations, you know, how much authority of power do you want to take the lead? You know, how much responsibility do you want to take? How much influence do you want over other people? And, you know, is it something you actually prefer to be a follower or you actually prefer to be a leader? But asking yourself these kind of questions and then thinking about what the impact of your answers are to those questions on other people in your organisation.
Mm.
So really thinking long and hard about your own approach and then thinking about how that impacts, because it's not going to impact exactly the same every person. Everyone's going to be different.
Absolutely.
And that's the challenge. It's complex, but you can understand it.
Absolutely. One of the things that fascinates me as a small business owner is that, and this is just a fact, I've got no data to back it up, but all of us that run businesses learn as we go along. You know, we react to things every day. We, you know, most of us start in our business because we have some form of expertise in that field. Most of us have no expertise in running businesses and doing all the kind of things that you have to do. And you learn as you go along. Once you delegate authority to someone, they are fairly much in the same boat as you. So one of the big questions I would say that you have to ask yourself is, what is my tolerance for risk? How much am I going to let this person discover by trial and error? Yeah, because the worst thing to do is to delegate to someone, they make a decision that doesn't quite work, and then you go, take it all back and move it all upstairs again and let it all fall apart. Whereas that's not how we learn to run the business in the first place. We learn by dealing with our mistakes and growing from that. So I think part of it is the ability to stand back and go, oh, you did that wrong, let's see what you do next, kind of thing. But that's really hard to do.
I think it's a really important point, Paul, because it's facing that fact that people are going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So, you know, often as owner managers, you know, we get scared that we don't want people to do things wrong or that we think we could do it better. But
yeah,
as you said, you know, we learn along the way by making mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, as parents, our children learn by letting them make mistakes.
Yeah.
But we're the guidance.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. Employees are children, but like that.
Yeah.
Employees do need guidance. So when you're talking about delegating and things like that, you can't just go, I am delegated and that's to you. You have to teach employees what that means,
right,
and you have to give them the opportunity to experiment with that, as you say.
Absolutely. I quite often use the analogy of learning to ride a bicycle as a youngster. Basically, you learn to ride a bike by falling off. And as parents, we can put stabilisers on your bike, but at some point they're going to come off and you're going to fall over. And that's when you learn to ride a bike.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and one thing that this sort of therefore raises for me is the concept of self-esteem and how individuals build self-esteem.
Mm.
So as a leader and as an owner manager, we may be displaying certain things about how we want to influence the way that we want to demonstrate competence. So our esteem may be okay in the organisation, but what's the esteem like for other people?
Mm.
And so if we can think in the way that actually it's about helping others to build their self-esteem, which therefore helps with confidence and therefore enables them to become competent in things, allows them to follow through, then that's something different, and you're shifting the focus from yourself and needing to demonstrate things to actually others.
Mm.
So there's something around self-esteem for me, and Paul, you mentioned about actually the challenge you can have where you might delegate something partly, but you've still got your hand on it,
mm,
and therefore, you know, if something slightly goes wrong, or you're not quite happy with it, you nip it back.
Yeah.
And the damage on self-esteem from that perspective is that employees will basically be very concerned about failure and will be recognising that someone's watching over them.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, it's a really challenging thing, and therefore maybe responsibility won't be taken for things and accountability for
exactly.
Them.
There's two problems with that, isn't there? One, you've destroyed the person's own esteem, as you say, and their credibility, but you've also set yourself up because now what you've told someone is, look, it doesn't matter what you do. If it's all going to go wrong, I'll do it myself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you've achieved basically two wrong ends by doing that, and from my point of view anyway, but it's vanishingly difficult to stand there and watch someone flounder. So I think a lot of it is how and on what basis you come back into it to try and do something. So I mean, for me, at the moment I'm in a process where I have delegated lock, stock and barrel the running of one of my businesses to one of the people that works for me, and I've appointed the managing director and giving them complete control over the business. And all I've said to them is, if you want some advice, you want some help, or you want a sounding board, call me. Otherwise, I'm just going to come into the board meetings once a month and beat you up if you haven't done what I want you to do. But, you know, it's about saying, don't ever worry about asking, but it's your call to ask. Yeah, I'm not going to just walk in and say, don't do it like that, do it like this.
I mean, the other problem, right, to the two points that you just mentioned there, Paul, is that you almost, if you don't kind of delegate to employees, you almost condition them that you have got all the answers.
Exactly.
And therefore, they stop thinking for themselves.
Exactly.
And not only do they stop thinking for themselves, every time they want to know something, they'll come to you for the answer.
Exactly.
And therefore, they take up more of your time.
Yeah.
And as the business grows, the more employees in the organisation, the more and more time that is being taken up by people continually asking you questions that they could quite rightly solve themselves.
Absolutely. And there's a sort of picture in my mind, which is something that's often raised in this respect, that those problems that employees bring are like monkeys.
Mm.
And everyone has a monkey on their back. And so everyone's queuing outside the boss's door with this monkey on their back, and the boss is sort of sitting there already with probably 10, 20 monkeys on his back,
yeah.
and he's just accepting more monkeys.
Yeah.
So how is it that you enable the employee to look after their own monkey, to take them away, to look after them, to nurture them, and actually solve the problems and see through issues within the business? So yeah, I mean, that's all really important stuff. And one thing that we touched on right at the beginning was obviously two really important aspects of delegating, of well, what do you delegate, and how do you delegate, what's the process that you go about. And Mark, I wonder whether you have some insight to share around, you know, what to delegate. I mean, are there particular ways that we can go about viewing that as a business owner, as a leader, senior leader within an organisation?
Well, I think for a start, you can just take some simple steps with analysing your time. You know, what do you actually spend your time on, and what do you need to be spending your time on? And then, you know, from there you can very simply look at areas, problems that you may delegate to your employees, you know, so that you can concentrate, hopefully, on those more kind of strategic planning type of activities rather than on day-to-day jobs.
Yeah, so you were telling me of a particular activity that leaders could do, where they literally just write down a typical day in the life of themselves, in chronological order, everything that they've done. So whether it's emails, whether it's, you know, picking up the phone, whether it's having a meeting, whatever that is, write it down in chronological order. And then actually assign some categories to that. And you were saying categories like strategic, operational, managerial, distractions, other, there may be another category that's particularly important. And that helps to start to create those boundaries. But the boundaries do blur. So, you know, I know when I've run workshops in the past and you sort of run exercises like this, people start, business owners start to look at them and go, well, what is strategic?
Mm.
What's a distraction? And is it really interesting? Because sometimes the distractions are actually strategic. So one business owner said to me, well, I was on a lunch break, and he said, I had a great idea come to me about how to take the business forward. And he said, so was the lunch break a distraction, or was it actually strategic thinking?
Yeah.
And it starts you to think about those things of, well, actually, yeah, how am I using my time? What spaces am I in? What spaces do I need to be in? And so, yeah, you get a sort of breakup, almost like a pie chart, where you have percentages for each of those activities. And you'll say to yourself, well, if you had a blank pie chart, what would you want it to look like?
Sure.
And hence, you know, what changes do you need to make?
Yep.
What might you need to delegate and give off to other people so you can start to be a more and more effective leader?
One of the things I'd like to ask you, Mark, because I've been thinking about this as an owner, and delegating quite a large amount of responsibility to people to run a business on my behalf. But of course, delegation happens at all kinds of levels. From your point of view, are you considering, you know, delegating right the way down through an organisation, even down to the level of just some subtasks somewhere in the organisation?
Exactly. I think when you start to look at your organisation, and as Simon said, if, you know, you just pick it up into what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, often those are owner managers that they find that they're spending more time on, you know, the operational, the distractions and the other,
yeah.
than they are on the strategic.
Yeah.
I think you've got to start breaking it down, and how many times have we sat there as owner managers, and someone's come to us and asked us a question, and we spent answered it, and when they sat the room, we thought, why did I spend my time doing that? They could have readily answered that themselves.
Yeah, sure.
So it's those kind of decisions that you start to plot, and you start to think, well, no, you know, if I work with my employees, if I start to train them on kind of taking responsibility for these things, then I'm, you know, I can start to tell them what those things look like. You know, part of that is thinking about recruiting the best people in the job.
Yeah.
More companies were notoriously bad at just recruiting from friends and we need to be thinking about the what and why of management. What do we need to do? How do we explain to our employees about delegation, about taking responsibility?
Yeah.
And what are the benefits of rewards? You know, often employees, you know, often you hear people say, oh, they only come to work for the money. But, you know, we're all at work a long time and we don't just go to work for the money.
Absolutely.
And lots of research now is showing that people go to work, they like to master things because they like to have a purpose.
Yeah.
So even from the highest job to the lowest job, people get some amount of purpose out of that. So,
absolutely.
You know, it starts to look at that, you know, it starts to work.
Absolutely. It's funny you should say that, Mark. I was just about to ask you a question in relation to that, about what motivates people. And again, coming back to owner-managers, one of the problems that a lot of owner-managers have is they don't always think that the staff are as committed to the business as they are. You know, as owner-managers, we'll work 24 hours a day, 9 days a week on the business because we have to. We don't expect or think that our staff will do that. So that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, was about the motivation of the people that are being delegated to. And if there are any particular things from your research that you found, you know, is it normal for instance, for small businesses to give people that they've delegated a lot of responsibility to a stake in the company, for instance?
Yeah, I've seen organisations that have done that. You know, they've given employees shares within the organisation, even within small companies.
Right.
I think it depends, you know, how you see this as an owner manager. I think the more and more we need to look at the performance of organisations, the more and more we need to move away from hierarchical models of managing organisations.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you tell people what to do all the time, all they will end up doing is they'll get bored, they'll only come for the money, and they won't care about anything else.
Sure.
If you involve them, if you show them that there are wider rewards just than the monetary rewards in the organisation, then they'll start to buy into that. But it's a long process. I mean, we are not used to that kind of approach in organisations, especially Western organisations.
Right.
So the kind of things that we're talking about now is a different mentality.
I mean, the experience, I suppose, that I would share with that, I was doing a group workshop with a forming management team of a small global organisation, and before the workshop, the owner of that organisation said, I would really like to share in this workshop that I would like to give people shares. As a way of rewarding them. I said, that's really interesting. I said, you know, what tells you that that's going to motivate and be welcome to those people? And he said, well, anybody would want that, wouldn't they? And I said, well, they might, but there may be lots of other reasons why they work for you and why they really enjoy working for the firm. So he took a decision not to share that in the workshop. And he actually had individual conversations with the staff at work and found out what truly motivated them and how they wanted to actually take things forward. And share ownership wasn't an aspect that really came top of the agenda. It was other things such as, you know, involvement in their work, as Mark's mentioned, around mastery, around the opportunity to develop a skill, around actually having a connection to the purpose of the organisation. So the owner manager themselves, who may be quite a charismatic individual, but you've built something together. There were lots of other reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Share ownership or financial rewards may play a role. Clearly, we all need to make money and we all need to look after our families and build our own personal lives. But a key part of this, and as we talk about esteem, back to the esteem factors, esteem doesn't just come from money. There are lots of other issues within a business. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting dynamic. I mean, finally, I suppose, moving on, because we've talked about the what, and there's ways of working out what to delegate. And not only as an owner manager can you list all the things you do on a daily basis and say, this is what I do, what is it that I can delegate? How do you know that that's the right stuff you're already doing?
Yeah.
And I suppose as I was talking through that, I was thinking, wait a second, actually we should be looking at this at a high level, is what does the business need to do? What needs to be done?
Yeah.
What role do you as an owner manager play in delivering that? And what role do employees play? And therefore participation and involvement in those discussions and working that out is really important.
Yeah.
Because it would be easy to say, well, I just want to delegate this stuff.
Yeah.
But actually for it not to be any material value to the organisation and actually the delivery of the organisation. So as we're talking that through, I was thinking, actually, no, there's something different there. But I suppose the second part, as we talk about, is that delegation is a process. And there's a way of delegating, and there's ways of delegating that have been sort of pointed out in the literature, in books, in magazine articles out there. And I know, Mark, that you've sort of done some of that reading and some of that work, and I was wondering whether you could share for the listeners what would that process be. And I know this is something that we'll obviously write up in the blog for later, so we can share it later, so it's not something the listeners will need to note down particularly now, but if you could just talk to us about some of the principles about what's the process of delegation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can start off with some very simple principles. I mean, we've talked about strategy and about knowing what's right. So, you know, without going into the complexity of strategy, one of the things that you want to start off with is strategic thinking. So giving yourself and your employees some time on your job to start thinking about these issues and start to think about, you know, what areas is it that I need to dedicate, which is going to move my kind of performance to a completely different level. And you can, you know, you can start doing that by starting to ask of your employees, what do you think we should be doing with the organisation? Look, we all know when we've worked for other organisations, how many times have we sat there and we go, we know what's going wrong, but the managers just can't.
Yeah.
So employees know what's going wrong. You've got to create an environment where they've got a problem-solving environment which they can start to put things right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as simple as circulating memos to your employees, just asking them what types of questions crop up from supply chains, from colleagues, from customers, and, you know, who do they think should be answering those questions?
Sure.
So you've got your own kind of value chain in there that you start to break down into who should be answering those questions from our customers, suppliers, etc. And therefore, how can you start to structure delegation so that they're competitive?
Right, and great. I mean, some really interesting points. Mm-hmm. And exactly that, Mark, you know, it sounds like you're very much on that top level and trying to work out even what the business ultimately does, what it needs to do to deliver successfully, and then cascading that through. And what we'll do is, through the blog, we'll share actually a delegation process. So at a more individual level, how might you approach that with a particular employee?
Yeah.
What are those 7, 8, 9 steps that you might want to take to do that? I know that we're sort of running out on the show today, of time today. So let's do that, Paul,
and share
that through that process.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are running out of time, sadly. It is a fascinating topic. We need to explore this further. But for the moment, a huge, huge thank you to Professor Mark Ridman of the University of Birmingham, Professor, I love this, of SMEs, People and Productivity, the best job in the world. Mark, thank you so much for joining us from Birmingham. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Yeah. And once again, a huge thank you to Dr. Simon Raby of the University of Kent Business School BRG programme. Thank you so much for joining us talking about the delegator. There will be a blog on the kentbusinessradio.co.uk website that explores this further. You can go into the website and download the BRG booklet, a free resource that goes into all of these traits that we've been discussing. There's also links to a lot of other research data. Some of it is free. Some of it has a small price attached to it. It's all very valuable data. Do go take a look. Have a trawl around the university website and all the resources they've got through this program and other programs they do. There's some fascinating stuff there. But for the moment, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Cool.
Thank you.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on kentbusinessradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, July the 28th. That was the guys from the University of Kent and Birmingham University talking about Delegator. There will be a blog that accompanies that goes up on the Kent Business Radio website shortly. What we're going to do now is have a news roundup.
Channel Radio News Update.
I guess the big story again this week is Operation Stack, which I've lost count of how many times it's been implemented in the last few weeks. There are one or two people tweeting about the causes of it, but as we know, the people that are affected by it locally here, there are a number of causes for Operation Stack to be implemented, striking French workers, migration problems in the tunnel, fires in the tunnel, all kinds of reasons why the tunnel and cross-channel ferries stop operating. But once again, we're in the middle of Operation Stack. The M20 has become a car park. And I just want to read you this. The Federation of Small Businesses have issued a statement and have written to the government, and they said, the Federation of Small Businesses is writing a letter to the government today, that's yesterday, Monday the 27th, calling on ministers to address once and for all the travel chaos caused by Operation Stack. The disruption is having a severe effect on the UK economy, causing extreme frustration for small businesses, not only in Kent, but nationwide too. The government must recognise that export opportunities are being lost, and our tourism trade adversely affected at the height of the travel season.
Exactly.
The current system whereby freight traffic is stacked onto long stretches of the M20, turning chunks of road into parking for up to 3,000 lorries at a time, began as a temporary measure in 1988. That's 27 years ago. It's simply unacceptable that a workable solution has not been planned and implemented in the intervening years. John Allen, who is the FSB national chairman, said the effects of Operation Stack have been at their most acute in the last few months, with the system in operation for 5 out of the last 6 weeks. On a local level, business meetings have been cancelled, deliveries are late, and travel time from home and work is extended. And we've seen the ripple effect rapidly spreading across the country. Many small firms are spending valuable time and money trying to find viable alternatives to honour commitments to their customers, both at home and in continental Europe. Businesses have run out of patience, with a sense of exasperation and strength of feeling among small firms at an all-time high. We appreciate that not all events such as strike action in France are within the government's direct control, but these extreme traffic delays have been a persistent issue for some years, with little progress at either local or national level to deliver a fit-for-purpose permanent solution. In the July budget, the UK Chancellor announced a fund for sustained investment in our roads. This is the perfect opportunity for Mr. Osborne to direct resources and funding towards a long-term solution in the affected areas in and around the southeast region. We've raised this issue directly with government, asking them to make solving this issue a top priority. We look forward to seeing concrete plans, put in place to address the disruption that is now being felt across the nation. Well, we really welcome the Federation of Small Businesses input into this and their help in lobbying government. The people of Kent, southeast Kent primarily, have suffered from this for 27 years. This year, it has been far worse than in previous years. I guess there's all kinds of reasons for that. The amount of times that there's been problems with the tunnel.
More immigration now.
There's a lot of there is the striking DFDS, My Ferry Link workers in France. We know about that. But the last four iterations of Operation Stack, only one of those was caused by striking workers. The others have been caused by sad fatalities in the tunnel, people trying to access the tunnel to cross. 3 weeks ago, there was a fire in the tunnel. So there's all kinds of reasons and there's all kinds of rationale for why the tunnel gets disrupted and why we have to do this. What we need to do, though, is stop talking about it and start finding some solutions. And it's been interesting. We've been asking on Twitter people to tell us. There's, first and foremost, the strength of feeling about this has got to an all-time peak.
Of course, because it's affecting everyone. I mean, when it starts affecting me coming from Whitstable, that's crazy. You know,
You're in trouble when you've upset Jules, basically.
But, I mean, you know, poor Chris coming in this morning. We were both late for the show. The lorry drivers as well. Yeah. You know, you imagine you're getting up and you're doing all those hours and then you're just stuck.
Absolutely stuck. For those that don't live in this area of Kent and don't understand the ramification of what goes on here, not only does the motorway shut, so it makes it very difficult to travel anywhere, but of course all the surrounding roads back up, and people get, you know, try and find shortcuts, so everywhere stacks up with people. Lorries try and park up in residential areas and in down rural country lanes, and they block roads, and basically everywhere from Maidstone to the Channel Tunnel suddenly becomes a no-go zone. You can't guarantee getting anywhere. So it isn't just businesses you know, trying to trade with a continent, it's the local businesses, it's homeowners, it's people trying to get home from work.
Yeah. People with children.
Yeah, picking children up from school. You can't do anything. The whole place grinds to a halt and it becomes really difficult.
It's, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in my life. I mean, it happened, what was it, 5-6 weeks ago, and I came on that big Hythe roundabout and I saw that, you know, the whole of the M20, is it?
Yeah.
Down to the just complete. Never seen anything like
it. They park 83 lorries per mile, apparently. Up to 3,000 lorries parked on the N20. So that's the problem. That's the situation that we're in. A number of people have suggested doing what they used to do originally when Operation Stack, which is to put a contraflow in place, so that you keep the motorway open in both directions, but you have a contraflow system on the other carriageway. Okay,
right.
That has been suggested by many, many people as a temporary measure.
Well, I noticed Damien Collins is tweeting, and he said yesterday, pleased with new plans for the M20, which will now always be kept open in both directions. And that was a Kent Online thing. Mm. But then today...
they said no. Highways Agency England, who are responsible for the motorway, have said they will not implement a contraflow because it's dangerous.
Okay.
Now, whether it is or whether it isn't, I don't know. But they are the ultimate people in charge of running this. You know, a lot of people are blaming Kent Police. So it's not Kent Police's fault. They can only do what they can do. They can only try and operate what they can operate.
But I would say on you know, there was no sign of any police today helping motorists who were sort of completely stuck and didn't know. Especially as you said, tourists, as caravans.
Yeah.
We're in the height of the caravan season.
It's a holiday season, and that makes it trebly worse. Mm. Absolutely. What we need to start looking at though is solutions. So a lot of people have mentioned the temporary solution of a contraflow. That has been ruled out at the last iteration. It may change, but the last thing I saw is Highways Agency England basically said no to a contraflow system. But that's only a temporary measure anyway. What we need to do is to solve the problem. We've had loads and loads of tweets, so I'm going to read a few of them. One of the funniest
but
ones...
first of all, Paul, stop, because when I came in this morning, you were saying to me, and we were a bit rushed, but how many years it's been...
27.
27 years.
27 years
faffing.
This has been happening, yeah.
Okay.
27 years.
And they've done nothing?
No, well, originally when it first happened, it didn't happen very frequently.
Mm.
And when it happened, the traffic wasn't as much as it was now.
No.
So they only closed one or two junctions. And they did have a contraflow originally.
Right. Okay.
They did. I remember it distinctly, having a contraflow originally. So there was kind of, it was a bit disruptive, but it wasn't bad. As time's gone on, more and more traffic crosses the channel now. You know, we export more.
Yeah.
We do more business on the continent. You know, a lot of the things that the politicians have been urging us to do is to join with our European partners and do stuff.
And I noticed that France, I heard a news bulletin 2 days ago saying, don't come across at the moment. They can't cope.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked on Twitter, how come this doesn't affect France? Well, it does.
Yeah.
The French have exactly the same problem we have. They have lorries parked up everywhere. Now, on French motorways, they have a thing called arrière repose, which is every...
holes in the floor where you can wee.
Thank you for that.
It's true.
But every, I think it's 20 kilometres, they have somewhere where you can pull off a motorway and park up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they have service areas as well.
Yeah.
We don't have the same system here. But even with that, the French have the same problem we have. They've got lorries stacked up all over the place. Some of the suggestions I've seen, Gordon Henderson, who's the MP for Sittingbourne, has made a suggestion that hasn't gone down very well at all, which is that they offer cross-channel ferries from the Isle of Sheppey instead. And people didn't like that.
Well, somebody was telling me that, I can't remember who it was, but their dad commutes along the waterway in a sort of jet ferry
ski
thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, a jet ferry, that takes lots of people.
Okay.
We could use the waterways more.
Absolutely. One of the interesting tweets I saw was from Paul Francis, who's the business editor of the KM.
Yeah.
And he made a very, very salient point. He said, it comes to something when the news headline is, the motorway's open. Which is absolutely true, isn't it?
Yeah. For an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Our lovely friend Neville Gaunt says, 8 hours ago on Twitter, we'll see the true impact of Operation Stack, that's the hashtag, with Bank of England quarterly review. Will it impact inflation control, FSB_policy, FSB Kent? Interesting.
Cool. What else are you seeing on the Twitter?
Well, Paul Francis, I've seen that contraflow plan, as you said, ruled out by Highways England on safety grounds. And he's Carl's from Kent. They're regulars on our show. He says, not again, Operation Stack is back. It's beyond a joke. Come on, Damien Green MP, Damien Collins. You know, time for action, do something. And I think that, looking through all the tweets, that is coming out loud and clear that people have just had enough.
They have. It's just got beyond the joke.
You almost feel
like
we're a laughing stock. If somebody were looking from Canada or Sweden, God forbid, they'd look at these pictures and just think, my goodness, you know, it's like when we have snow, isn't it? An inch of snow. John Nurden, our lovely friend, he's spluttering about it, and he says, speak to Maidstone sound firm Phonophobia Limited, which is suffering from the effects of Operation Stack on the M20. So that'd be interesting. We'll try and catch up with them.
Yeah. EcoSound Services, based in Ashford, said, oh no, junctions 8 to 13 now closed and we're stuck. There's hundreds and hundreds of tweets, all from the businesses of this area of Kent, who are now being badly affected by this.
Well, Phonobia, looking at their Twitter line, it's Phonobia_limited, say, it's a total nightmare. All the M20 traffic is forced past our main warehouse on the A20, and it's starting to cost us a fortune. Mm. You know, so there's all these knock-on effects, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just seen a tweet from someone, I can't see who their name was, Transport England, I think, who was saying that it's now costing the Kent economy £1.5 million a day.
Really?
In lost productivity, and I think, and the rest, I would have said.
Well, people are going to avoid us, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're not going to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been talking to local businesses in this area. By the way, the radio station here is based only 5 minutes from the Channel ports, and so we are particularly badly affected here. But the businesses around this area, lots and lots of people now saying, do you know what, I think we might move. We can't afford to be here any longer because it's just beyond a joke.
Well, poor Linda Cloak, our lovely guest, has just tweeted 12 minutes ago. She's taking the road through New Romney to get back to Maidstone.
And don't tell anyone.
She's a little bit alarmed about how she's going to get back. You might have to stay on till next week.
Yeah. Mindfit have tweeted, and this is an interesting question. Operation Stack has national implications. Will it affect the Bank of England intervention of interest rates?
Yeah, of course.
You know, one of the problems that we have, although we have massive employment in the UK now, our productivity is still low. And things like this are a part of the general cause of low productivity. So, again, it's having profound impacts on what's going on in the UK.
And your import-export as well. We've got Motus Ireland, and they're saying hashtag Dover Opstack, Operation Stack, M20. And also P&O Ferries, Opstack has been extended. This is... they've been extended to Junction 13 of the M20. All non-freight traffic is advised to use the M2, A2 where possible. But, of course, then that has a knock-on effect.
Then that stacks up, yeah, and then you get traffic jams in Canterbury. And then Canterbury City Council kindly close all the car parks and sell them off, you know, and stuff like
that. That was just 9 minutes ago.
Yeah. There's dozens and dozens of Periscope videos of the traffic congestion, not on the motorway, in the road surrounding the motorway. Yeah. That's the worrying thing. Dick Holness has said, during Operation Stack, what's happening on the French side? Surely they have hundreds of trucks to park. Yes, of course they do, and they have exactly the same problem that side of the tunnel. What I'd like to know is what people think about the solutions. Now, my understanding, I might have this wrong, but my understanding was that there were organisations involved in this that are looking to establish one giant lorry park where they can park up to 3,000 trucks. Now, personally, as someone that was heavily involved in designing queuing theory-based networks, I can tell you that is a disaster waiting to happen. If you put all your eggs in one basket, you're just going to create a giant bottleneck somewhere. And
well, I'll go back to, what about the poor lorry drivers? Just sitting in a car park all day?
Yeah.
That's not the solution, is it?
No, it isn't. And also, you're going to suffer. And I think this is why it's taken so long. Because they were looking for that one giant solution, there's been a lot of nimbyism. People don't want a 3,000 lorry park next to their house or next to their shops or next to their business. I think the solution has got to revolve more around multiple truck stops. Now, on the M20, we already have two truck stops that are privately operated, the Ashford International Truck Stop. Now, that houses, I think, 350 trucks. Back at the beginning of this year, they applied for planning permission to double that. As far as I know, they haven't started work on that yet, so that needs to be expedited quite quickly, so you can take up to 600 trucks there. There's Service 24 here at Hythe that can also handle 300 or 400 trucks. What we need are two or three more of those kind of things.
Yeah, but I'm still going to annoy you now, but yeah. These lorry drivers are dads, husbands, people trying to do an 8-hour shift.
Yeah.
Are we going to just chuck them in a no, car park?
No, the lorry parks have gyms, cinemas, swimming pools,
showers. But they don't
have
families. They don't have wives and kids.
No, sorry. You have to know, if you're a truck driver, by law, you have to stop. You can only drive for a certain amount of time. So the truck stops weren't put there for Operation Stack.
Right.
They were put there because truck drivers have to stop.
They need it.
Yeah. What I'm saying is we need more of them. And if we have more of them, you can then park up the trucks during Operation Stack. Is my solution. I think you just need five or six more truck stops. Because you've got to park the lorry somewhere. And one of the other things that happens, not just with Operation Stack, is because we don't have many truck stops, ordinarily, a lot of rural areas in country lanes and some, housing areas, lorry drivers park up.
Yeah.
If you drive here across the marsh on any given night, you'll always find half a dozen lorries parked up in country lanes.
You know, I live on the seafront. Occasionally we get them that park on the seafront where there's no restrictions to the parking.
Yeah.
But, of course, the residents take umbrage because do you want someone parked outside your house all night?
Absolutely. So, to my mind, part of the solution to this is to do something we should have been doing anyway, which is to have more general-purpose truck stops that we can use. There's also people suggesting that there are various places that could be used temporarily.
Right.
The county showground at Detlin.
Yeah.
Manston.
Yeah.
The airport.
Yeah.
At Ramsgate. And Folkestone Racecourse.
Maybe they could get a few jets to freight the stuff out from Manston, which is sitting there.
Well, without being frivolous, there are empty spaces that could be used on a temporary basis. Why does it always have to stack them up on the motorway and cause all the problems? So, basically,
but also, what are we going to do with the immigrants? You know, they're all trying to get over to the UK. What are we going to do about that in Calais?
Absolutely.
How do we need, you know, do we need to work more with the French?
The tunnel needs to be policed better as well.
Yeah.
So, have you got any more tweets coming in about Operation Stack at the moment?
Well, Nurse Liz, who's lounging in Maryland.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect her remotely.
Says, is this a lorry driver protest or political?
No, it's neither. It's just that the tunnel's closed and therefore you've got a load of traffic stacked up. It really is nothing, you know. Let's not get carried away.
But what she may not know is that immigrants trying to come over have died.
Yeah, they have. They have.
Swimming, jumping on lorries.
Yeah. But the fundamental problem is, for whatever reason, it's when the tunnel and the ferries are closed. That might be strike action. It might be illegal immigration activity. It could be a fire. It could be an accident.
Do we know how the fire started?
No, but it's all irrelevant. There are hundreds of reasons why it comes to a grinding halt. What we've got to do is find out what happens when there's a problem with cross-channel stuff. Mm. You know, there will always be problems that will happen. We have to have a solution for it. And, and that's what I'm interested in. I want people's sensible solutions, potential solutions, for what we could do to park lorries when the channel crossings are disrupted.
Now, Linda Cloak is next to me. You can say this into the mic, Linda. Go on. Grab the mic and say it, or otherwise I'll have to read it.
Okay, I think it's a really great idea, the truck stop. I think we should use the facilities that we've got, like Detlin Showground. Mm. I think, you know, it's sat there empty.
Yeah.
Why not use it?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Staffed.
And I don't know what the rationale for not doing it is, because I'm not involved in talking to the politicians and what have you.
And then, like you say, Manston is another good one.
There are places, and they'll probably tell you there's reasons why we can't do it and da-da-da-da-da, but 27 years we've been discussing this now. We need a solution, and we need it urgently. So if anybody wants to carry on the discussion, we'd be pleased to hear from you. We're kind of running towards the end of the show now. But Operation Stack has once again caused enormous problems to Mid and South and East Kent, and it's now been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. I think the motorway's been closed, I read somewhere, for 5 out of the last 7 weeks.
Mm.
And that's just ridiculous.
I mean, I got stuck in traffic, Linda, you'll know this, being a lady, I was going to Heathrow, and I was, it should have taken me an hour and a half by my sat-nav, 4.5 hours. Luckily, I didn't miss my flight to Manhattan. But there was only one service station. I was so lucky because I was dying to go to the loo. I was starting to really panic. What do I do? I'm on my own in the car. Can't just get out, leave the car in gridlock. You know, go behind a bush. It's not very nice. And luckily I came up to the, what, those Cobham, is it, service stations?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the only service station.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Mm. At festivals, the youngsters have got a little thing that they can attach to themselves. That's it, one of
yeah,
those.
Yeah, well, how does that work?
I don't think we want to know, thank you.
Just attach it to yourself.
Yeah. I think so. I've never used one personally, but my daughter went to festival and she said that they're... Yeah,
I shall get a Shiwi, but it's scary. And what Paul says about France is true, because I love the Le Routiers, you know, that you can stop off and they have them regularly and you can have a meal. But, so these lorry parks are quite nice for lorry drivers and they've got
And but they cost money to stay there overnight.
Yeah, but presumably the companies pay, do they?
Not always. A lot of lorry drivers are owner-operators and there's some issues with that. But then, you know, we're talking about two different things here. You're talking about normal operation and then you're talking about emergency operation. And quite clearly, during an emergency, you know, the council could say, or the government could say, look, we'll pay the overnight parking costs or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll just open the parks and pay the operators the money. It would be far cheaper than the loss of productivity that we're suffering at the moment. But unfortunately, we're fast running out of time. We've got a number of other issues to cover in our news roundup. So I just want to move on to a few other things. But do keep your suggestions for how we fix Operation Stack
for
next week, because this is going to be on running. I've had an email from Gravesham, and they are looking, that's Gravesham Council, they are looking for independent remuneration panel volunteers. The council needs to appoint 3 volunteers to its independent remuneration panel, which provides the council with advice on various matters, including the operation of its members' allowance scheme. The council's monitoring officer is consulting widely and seeking nominations and applications. If you would like to find out more or to volunteer yourself, please email martin.goodman, that's martin.goodman@gravesham.gov.uk, martin.goodman@gravesham.gov.uk.
The BBC London Traveller saying the M20 is closed, coastbound, J8, Junction 8, Maidstone services to Junction 13, Folkestone. Access remains at Junction 11 for Eurotunnel for tourist traffic, Operation Stack.
Cool.
I have one here which is about Reuben's wish to walk.
Yeah, can we do that quickly?
We love Kent, and this is from the lovely We Love Kent that were on last week. They said they're having a huge event on August the 2nd at the Britannia Theatre, and the event is family focused with over 1,000 people attending. And the event has been organised to raise funds for the charity Reuben's Wish to Walk. We Love Kent have booked some of the biggest stars from around Kent, as well as some of the most promising artists to perform at this event. With stars from The Voice and Britain's Got Talent, it's guaranteed to be a fantastic day. I've been invited. Have you?
Mm.
Have you? On top of this, the event has received incredible support and sponsorship from well-established companies such as Arriva, Haven Holidays and the Holiday Inn and countless others, meaning that the event is to be a huge success. Alongside the launch of We Love Kent's groundbreaking brand, the event will be raising money for Reuben's Wish to Walk charity. Reuben, you may know him as the legend, is a brave 2-year-old boy who has an extreme difficult start to life with such medical conditions as dysphagia.
It's easy for you to say.
Struggles to consume liquids, so that will be with swallowing, I would think. Global development delay and dystonia. If you want to find out more, please go to eventbrite.co.uk, We Love Kent event, or go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk. It's 10 till 4, tickets are just £5, and it's August the 2nd at Britannia Theatre. Where is Britannia Theatre?
Chatham, I do believe.
Please say you heard about it on the Business Bunker.
Yeah, please support that. It's a wonderful, wonderful cause. We've had a tweet from Social Marley that says, Vanilla Web, loving listening to the Business Bunker show. We're all listening in the office. could you give us a shout out, please? We're trying to get private investors, which is not crowdfunding, for our new software platform. So do give them a follow, Social Marley on the Twitter. Social, M-A-R-L-E-Y, Social Marley on the Twitter. Do give those a follow. Hey, listen, we've kind of got to the end of our show. I'd like to say a massive, massive thank you to today's guests, the lovely Linda Cloak from Click Elite and Click Events.
Thank you.
Dr. Simon Raby from the University of Kent Business School, BIG, Business Improvement and Growth Programme. To Professor Mark Gilman from Birmingham University. And Mark is a Professor of Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises at Birmingham. A huge thank you to all the people that participated in the show, that emailed and tweeted us. We thank you very much. We will be back next week. Coming up on Channel Radio at 5 o'clock, Mr. Craig Avery with the Ladies' Favourite, with the Craig Avery Show. That's followed at 7 o'clock by 18 tracks of unsigned new and up-and-coming music with the fabulous Mr. Jamie Andrews on the New Potato Show.
Great show.
And then at 9 o'clock, Club Culture with the wonderful Boy George. Mm. And then at 11 o'clock, you can round the night off with some headbanging on the Big Noise with Phil Thorne.
I do love to bang my head, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. So do stay tuned to channelradio.co.uk. We'll be back on the Business Bunker with you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Wave after wave of good music. This is Channel Radio.